Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help. When I was young, was so much younger.
Hello and welcome to Real Recovery. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio and still at his lake studio, facing the water with the sun shining in. George P. Fraser. Hello, George.
Hey, Billy. How are you?
I'm well. Nice to talk to you. It'll be nice to see you sometime.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. Yeah, of course. Yeah, we're still in separate studios, so hopefully that will change one day soon. We got a very interesting story tonight. Janessa Barr is going to be joining us, and she had a seven-year opioid plus addiction, more than just opioids, and she now has got a thriving ministry, not only to stray animals, but to children in Honduras. That's where she lives with her husband. And it's quite a story. We're going to hear about it all tonight, time permitting, of course.
Yeah, if we can get her on. Gosh, that's interesting. One of the things with addiction, Bill, is a lot of times it starts by maybe having a medical issue. And I'm wondering if there's a possibility of that tonight when we hear her story. But however we get there, we're faced with all of a sudden the realization comes, and I believe it comes from the Holy Spirit, that, hey, this isn't what I intended. We have a friend named Glenn R. that we both know who talks about his mom used to say Glenn was a good boy. And he realized one day in his adult life that that wasn't true anymore. And I believe that came to him from the Holy Spirit. And that started a chain of events that led to 20 plus years of recovery right now.
Mm-hmm.
And what I wanted to talk about tonight is step 10. We always do a step. There's nothing magical about the steps. However, they help us to walk out our faith, and just knowing them doesn't do you any good. As it says in the book of James, that even the demons know scripture and shudder, correct? Mm-hmm. You got to do what it says. And the step is we continue to take our personal inventory. And when we were wrong, we promptly admitted it. And one of the things is we need to get honest. And Bill, you talk a lot about non-negotiables that you do. You're working out, you're in the Word every day, you're praying. And a non-negotiable is something you do even when you don't want to do it. And I know for me, sometimes my Bible reading, my prayer time, my workouts can be obligatory rather than, gosh, I get to read my Bible today. Now, I know I should be able to rejoice in the fact that I can talk to the creator of the universe and have an audience. But if I'm honest, some days it's tough.
Mm-hmm.
Some days there's things I would rather do. And if you're going to really make changes, you have to give yourself the leeway to be honest, that you don't have to portray yourself as doing a lot better than you are. I think the humility that comes in our walk and our recovery is, apart from Christ, we can do nothing. We can do all things through Christ, but it's not anything I've done. In fact, it's not anything I wanted to do. It's a gift from God whose mercy and grace helps us to want to get sober and then shows us the way to do it. But you still have to pick up your cross and deny yourself. And there's going to be days, Bill, when you don't want to do it. But you and I've talked about this before. We never leave the health club feeling worse than when we went in. We never regret going to do a workout because afterwards you feel good. But going to church, going to my Bible study, going to a gathering with recovery friends, yeah, sometimes I don't want to do it. But I know what happens when I don't do it. And I have to be honest with myself and go, you know, I really don't want to do this. But I know I'm going to be a lot better off after I do it. It's the opposite, Bill, of using. When we decide to go use, the first part can be great, the high, the excitement, the escape, the celebration. But there's a cost that's paid, a hangover, loss of money, sometimes jail time, loss of relationships, and sinning against God should be on that list too. So the total picture isn't good. And it's interesting to me to look at it, that the delayed gratification is the key to my recovery, in that I don't want to make the compulsive, impulsive decision to not pray, to not read the Bible, the same that I don't want to pick up and have a beer. Does that make any sense?
It does. So when we take this step 10 and we continually, I love that word, we continue to take personal inventory. So it's an ongoing thing. I think it's when you reflect on your behavior, you can ask yourself, how has my behavior changed since I've been working the steps and with these principles with Jesus as my higher power?
Absolutely, Bill. And the difference between this and four is huge, but a lot of it is there's a lot of good things in our inventory. When you take a balance sheet, you have assets and liabilities. How about the fact you're saved today? How about the fact that you're sober today?
Yeah.
How about the fact that you've had restoration in your relationships, that you've been redeemed, saved, and are being sanctified by the living God through his Son, Jesus Christ, and the Holy Spirit? Part of staying in this and adding to it, we press on towards the goal to be more Christ-like in Philippians, is there's a lot of good things that are happening.
Yeah.
And I think, Bill, the longer you go in your recovery and your walk, the inventory on the liability side, there's less issues that are committed and there's more things that are omitted. What I mean by that is, what could I have done that I didn't do today? And when I was using, I apologized for myself, who I was. Today, I apologize for what I do or didn't do that I could have done better. Big difference, okay?
Yeah.
And it's okay to admit when you're wrong, because when you're wrong, you're wrong. And usually the last person who knows it is us, right?
Yeah, right.
Give yourself permission to be honest with yourself and go, you know, everybody's got the happy, smiley face. I remember going to a church one time. They have like the singing insurance salesman up there on the worship team with the perma grins. I've never been that happy in my life. And it, you know, I'm sitting there going, I'm not doing this right. You know?
Yeah.
So I could have come up with a better example, but sometimes for me, my recovery is a lot of work and I don't want to do it. My Christianity, my walk is hard and I don't want to do it. And I get tired of it. And that's my sinful nature. And I have to acknowledge it and go, hey, God, help me. Give me the desire to do this today. Because today I'm starting to feel like it's not working and I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling you, God.
Mm-hmm.
And David talks about the desert experience. Where are you, God? I think the honesty is that not every day is going to be super in this, but my worst days of my walk and my recovery are a lot better than my worst days of using.
Mm-hmm. In step 10, George, it says we continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admit it. I would also think that in step 10, when you do good along with the bad, you should also jot down your victories and the areas where you've seen some growth, just for encouragement's sake.
Well, yeah, and it keeps us grateful, doesn't it?
Yeah, grateful and humble.
I think, well, you know, I'm working on that one. It might be easier for you than me, right? That's a shot. But I always think when we do the show, one of the things for me is I listened to this station when I was trying to get sober. And God allows us to carry the message of other people's recovery. And I get that. That's a real before and after picture.
Yeah.
Not anything great about me, but everything great about what a great God we have.
Yeah.
And if you think that you've done it and you've gone too far and you can't turn to God, that's the enemy. God loves us. He loves us when we don't like ourselves.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
George P. Fraser, a lot of very solid wisdom once again from you to get the real recovery started tonight. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to welcome Janessa Barr, our guest, onto the program, and you're going to hear her amazing testimony. We'll take a short break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Real Recovery. Bill and George, we've got Ryan on the board tonight, and we're all set to go with an amazing story. This one, I think George is going to blow you away. Just my prediction.
Looking forward to it, Bill.
Yeah, yeah. Our guest in studio is Janessa Barr. She's got a story, and also, you know, the story of addiction, recovery, what the Lord has done in her life, and what the Lord's doing in her life is fascinating. We're going to hear all about it tonight. Janessa, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right, let's be focusing. All right, there we go. Let's get to know Janessa and a little bit about what kind of diagnosis you got from a doctor at kind of a weird age. And the description that he used was very disturbing.
I think I was 25, and I went into the doctor. I'd just gotten back from backpacking after college, so it was just like, what is this?
Uh-huh.
This is just ridiculous. And I had an infection eat my L5-S1, so it looked like there was termites.
Like termites eating your spine?
Yeah.
Okay.
It looked like a piece of wood with termites.
Boy.
It was the creepiest thing. I was like, can I feel it? Where is that? but I was too young for the surgery that they wanted to do, so they just started with, Tylenol-3, and then, you know, by the time I went to rehab, I was not on that anymore.
Yeah.
I was hardcore.
All right. So let's go into what happened with the use of pain medication and how that went down a spiraling road.
That was crazy.
Yeah. Tylenol-3 went to what?
Tylenol-3 went to Vicodin. Vicodin went to Norco's. I was extremely scared of anything oxy, so I never touched that. I'm really thankful that I have a fear of needles, because I'm sure I would have tried heroin, which was way cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So in my pill pocket, I called it, Adderall, Klonopin, Xanax, anything. That's how I dictated my mood.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it was for me to be like, what do I have to do right now? Okay, I'll take this. I mean, there was 40 pills a day.
40 pills a day.
Yeah.
To try to stay ahead of the pain.
Well, and I never knew about you building up tolerance, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I never knew that you would become dependent. I went into the doctors and was like, oh, okay, I'm too young for surgery, so we're going to do this. And then epidural shots and cortisone shots, and they were so painful. It would just scream as they put a needle in your spine. And nothing was working. And then my brain became more and more used to whatever dose I was on. And so then you have to go up. And unfortunately, the pain clinic that I went to was more of like a pill pusher then. So that was a cool thing, though. After rehab, I got clean and everything. And I went back there, and the nurses were crying. The nurses were awesome. They were just trying their best.
Mm-hmm.
And they were so proud of me for quitting.
So they've got you using a lot of pills and a lot of pain meds, and so
why the Adderall?
To be on, because the pills would make me tired. You know, I wouldn't feel anything. I'd be all happy, but then I have to go to work, and I need to be on.
No, I get that, but how did you get the prescription for it?
Oh, these weren't prescriptions. I mean, the prescription was absolutely the pain meds. But then it was, okay, I started buying and selling, and I'd go over to the dealer's house and be like, okay, I have an order for this, this, and this. And, of course, I got it from the pharmacy, like a doctor, prescription, but that would last maybe 3 or 4 days.
Sure.
And this is, I mean, a large amount. And so at the end, I was able to buy other drugs, sell them to other people to cover some of my expenses. I mean, it's $200 a day.
Did it cover the pain, though?
Yes and no. I got so used to it that I would take it and it would work for a couple hours and then I need more.
Okay.
And so it never got the pain completely gone, all day, extended release, any of that stuff.
The reason I ask, I was in my 20s, I had 3 back operations. And the last, before the last operation, nothing they gave me touched the pain. And so when you're in, my experience is when you're in that much pain, you withdraw from everybody, you get depressed, and it's like you're in your own world. Did you go through that?
Yeah. It was like I had 2 lives.
Okay.
Yeah. And when you use the drugs, they make you feel these feelings. So if you're already depressed, if you're already sad or already have anxiety, you know, I would have to take an Adderall to be on for work, but also a Xanax to calm my nerves. So.
So when you started using more than what the doctor was prescribing, you were basically shopping for whatever was out there that you wanted mm-hmm. to get your hands on, and you were open to trying all kinds of things.
Oh, yeah.
Because you were so addicted from the painkillers.
I tried to quit myself so many times.
Mm-hmm.
Withdrawal is, especially after years and years and years of doing it, it's horrible. It's worth it. I'm glad I actually went to a rehab center and did it.
Right.
But.
How long were you doing this?
My drug use?
Yeah.
7 years.
Okay. That's a long 7 years.
I celebrated 7 years clean this year in January. Second is my clean date. And I was just like, wow, the last 14 years. You know, they say that it's your golden recovery when you celebrate however long.
Yeah.
And I just still can't wrap my mind around it because that person back then, it was horrible.
So I'm getting the feeling, Janessa, that your problem with your back still exists, though. Explain that one to me.
You know,
the termites are eating your spine. I don't know what how that gets remedied.
They went in and did 2 surgeries.
Okay.
In Maple Grove.
Okay.
They did a spinal fusion.
Oh, okay. So we had some repair work done.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And then they went in a couple weeks later and moved the screws around because they were setting off my sciatica.
Wow.
So now, obviously, we live in a very warm climate, so I don't have as much of the body aches that the my arthritis and everything would have up here. But I get a massage once a week. I have a stretch class I go to get the lactic acid out, all that kind of stuff. And I really try to watch myself. I'm not really great at it, at not pushing myself. So I'll be carrying a 45-pound bag of dog food, like, no problem. And mm-hmm. then the next day, I'm like, oh, but never anything
mm-hmm.
like it was.
Yeah. Janessa, what was going on with your relationships with family, with friends, with were you removed, isolated? What was going on at that time?
What period?
Well, in the using period, the
okay.
7 years.
So in the beginning, I had a really cool group. We went to college together. We lived together. I think that they did the intervention out of love because I was out of control, but it came as judgmental, an ultimatum. And you don't give an addict an ultimatum. Like, they're not going to pick you.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. So I didn't talk to those people. The girl I've known since I was 18, we have an amazing friendship now. She was like, I need to remove myself. My father and I have history.
Okay.
Which is one of the reasons I was using just to not feel.
Okay.
My mom was always there. My grandparents were always there. And my mom knew, and she knew. And she just didn't know what to do by herself. Mm-hmm. If I say no, she's, you know, what is she going to do? There was not that backup. I actually met my husband, and he thought I had legit pain and was trying to get me insurance and trying to help so I didn't have to buy him on the streets and go in places that weren't safe all the time. It was a year after we got married that I went to rehab, and definitely wasn't the wife I wanted to be
mm-hmm.
before I got clean.
Mm-hmm. So was there any time in that seven-year period where you were using, but you were crying out to God or looking for support in a spiritual environment? Or
the whole time.
The whole time.
In church. Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, I always knew God knew my heart.
Uh-huh.
I always knew, you know.
He does know your heart, by the way.
Yes. And it was always me. You know, I'd bring groceries over to the drug dealer's house because I know her kids are in jail and she's taking care of her grandkids and they don't have food and she sells drugs. I always had the real me in there.
Yeah.
But there were times where I was mad at him. I've had horrible abuse.
Mm-hmm.
I have gone through some stuff. And mm-hmm. so there was a lot of times where I'm like, why? What is the purpose of this? What did I ever do?
Yeah, right.
But yeah, I mean, my first tattoo was faith, because I just always had that faith that, like, this is going to be okay. This isn't how I'm going to die. God has so much more planned for me. That was always going through my mind.
George, I think your first tattoo is faith, but you didn't go to a very reputable tattoo artist, and he spelt it F-I-A-T-H.
No.
Yeah. I'm just kidding.
Oh, my goodness. Bill.
No, I'm just teasing, because I like to tease George.
So do you think it's wrong that I have it on my forehead, Bill?
No, I don't. I don't. You know, okay. I haven't seen you in a while, which is good. But anyway.
Good. Yeah. That works for me, you know.
Play nice, guys.
Oh, we're nice. We're very nice. We love
this
each other.
This is nice for us. Put your seatbelt on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's some definite hardships to the story, Janessa, and it does bring about all kinds of tough emotional thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I appreciate your vulnerability on all that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think it's time, George, that we will take our first break. But when we come back, we're going to continue to hear more about Janessa's story and what God has done in her life and what God is doing in her life, because it is spectacular.
See if I've got you have a chance of seeing every night I have the strangest dream. Impressing by the way I could have been left you on my own. So let's see.
We're back with Real Recovery, Bill and George. We're having an amazing conversation with Janessa Barr. She's telling her story, and there's still lots to come, so we're excited to hear more. So, Janessa, maybe you can bring us to the point where you have now faced the point where you go, intervention necessary, rehab absolutely essential.
Yeah.
How bad did things get?
Oh my gosh, this is so hard because just everything comes back.
Like I bet.
These doors just open and they're like, do you remember all the bad you did?
Yeah. Well, we can change subjects.
No.
We can talk about George because he always loves talking about himself.
I love sharing this because I didn't know about addiction. I didn't know about recovery. I hate the stigma. I hate that it's like, that person's just trash, you know? And it's like, None of us pick to be an addict. I wouldn't wish this on anyone. You just get labeled. And the way that people look at it, like, oh, you're an addict. Well, no, that's not my title. It's not who I am. And that doesn't help with the guilt or any of the crazy amount of feelings that you have the first few months. It is so hard. And so worth it. It's amazing, but it's so hard. Sorry, what was the question? Oh, Lord, I've never told anybody. My husband knows, but we were in Ohio visiting his family. He always called them his brother. And William's okay, but William was 8 and going through chemo, and I stole one of the bottles of morphine from the cupboard. And I just drank it. Like, I don't do needles. I didn't know how to do it. And we got back home, and I'm in the garage smoking, and my husband comes out and goes, I just got a call, and they can't find the medicine, and they're blaming the babysitter. And I was like, oh yeah, it's got to be him. Totally not me. Would never. And finally I was like, I didn't take the full bottle. I took the one that was already open with a little bit left. And like, that was better. You know, like that, mm-hmm. that was, look what I made it
just
better.
A little left.
Horrible decision. Yeah. This whole full one. Oh my gosh. I broke my husband's heart. I broke that friendship. I really hope that the mom can forgive me, because it was the moment where I was like, I can't do this anymore. And I went into the recovery center that I grew up 2 miles from and walked in and was like, I need to talk to the director. I need to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was me. It was me saying I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. It was horrible. The look on my husband's face, the messages from the family. It had gotten bad before that, but I was at the point of no return.
Mm-hmm. Well, the good news was that you had taken that critical first step of saying, I need help, and here I am. And for George, a lot of people, that's a hard step to take. I mean, that's the hardest step, isn't it, George?
Well, it's the start of, you know, the hardest part of your life, I think, getting sober. But one of the things that we look at, Bill, is that the Holy Spirit, I believe, has to convict you of that you don't want to do it anymore, and there's a solution. And I think it's general grace for people that aren't Christians, okay? I don't think anybody just goes, well, you know, I'm going to get sober now. I've had enough. There were a lot of opportunities in every addict I've ever talked to quit beforehand, but it didn't connect. And I think the start of the miracle, if you're out there pondering whether you should quit or not, is God's talking to you. That he wants you to do it. And once you realize that and you realize God's on your side, with God, all things are possible, Bill. And that helps us.
I agree, George. And I'm amazed at God's timing, God's strength that he gives you for every day. But that first step, going in on your own saying, I need help, I know that is going to be a very significant message for many people tonight who are at that place where they know in their heart they need help. And your courage will be inspiring to many, many people.
I knew that I had to do it with God, mm-hmm. where I went is a faith-based business or recovery
center. Yeah.
I can't imagine doing it by myself.
I can't either.
You know, we weren't allowed music, and Christian music is, it saves me in Honduras. I mean, okay. You know, it's like that constant little encouragement when you're just like, ugh, this
yeah.
again.
Yeah, it's a lifeline,
so
isn't it?
I had to print out all the words to my favorite songs. Andisa, Overcomer.
Yeah.
My husband, I go to all the concerts. Oh, I love those people. And mm-hmm. Toby Mac. And so I printed out all the lyrics to have on the wall so yeah. I could still sing like the, you know. So I definitely missed having radio access.
Yeah. Yeah. So talk about what went on in your heart spiritually during your time in rehab.
It was like Disneyland. It was horrible.
What does that mean?
I was so excited. My husband dropped me off January 2nd, and I just jumped out of the car. He's bawling. I'm like giddy, excited, right?
Yeah.
And I come in, and I'm like, all right, I can put puzzles together. I can read. I can, you know. And the day after I got there, he sent my favorite flowers to the rehab. So they come in, and I'm like, oh, yes, this is so cool. It's such a, you know, Gerber daisies. They're beautiful. They're, you know, happy.
I love Gerber daisies.
Yeah. Yep. He sent them to the nurses and said, thank you for taking care of her.
Oh, it wasn't even for you.
No. We're all at the dinner table, and I was like, oh, those are, where are those going? Those are, by day three, I was up at 6 or 7 making breakfast for everybody. It was the craziest transformation.
Wow. You felt God had stepped in.
That's an understatement.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the fact that my recovery took the first time around, you know, it doesn't always happen like that for people.
Yeah, George, I'd love for you to comment on that.
Yeah, it happens different ways for different people. And I think we can send a wrong message that, like, the way I got sober or the way you got sober is the only way God gets people sober.
Oh, yeah.
He does what he wants to do, obviously. And I think the key for us is to make sure we stay in recovery.
Yeah.
And share the message like you're doing to help other people and let them know that there's a God who loves you and there's a way out. And you're doing a great job of that.
This whole thing is God. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, he doesn't pick the qualified. He qualifies the ones he picks. And his disciples, I mean, nobody's ever come to him just perfect. You know, he was hanging out with all types of people.
Yeah. Kind of some rough characters.
But I mean, you read about it and you're like, you were a disciple? Like, what? You did what?
Yeah. Your resume is not that impressive.
No, and there was 12 of you. Yeah. Like, come on. And to see that example in the Bible, it concretes that, like, this is my purpose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. everything I've gone through is just a bigger testimony to him.
You know, that's critically important, guys, that the enemy will tell us that, no, this time we've really done it. We've gone too far. But in God's mm-hmm. word, Moses killed somebody.
Yeah.
David had an affair and killed the lady's husband. Paul supervised the stoning of Stephen, I believe. And
yeah.
what that says is, these are my guys, you know? These are the guys I use to carry my message.
Mm-hmm.
So don't listen to that you've gone too far and God can't help you, because that's not from God. And I take a lot of strength in that. Bill, early in my recovery, that drowned out the voices of, you know, you're a phony. How long is this going to last? Mm-hmm. You've done this before. And so keep going to the word and keep praying, right?
Oh, yeah. I have shirts that's like, not today, Satan. And I will, like, I rebuke you, you're like, because it's constant. The more you do for Christ, the more you rely on him and give him your heart and soul, the more you're going to be attacked. You're going to have difficulties. And we just keep pursuing on.
Yeah, there's going to be opposition, especially if you are using your life and your mouth as a testament to God's faithfulness and his glory and his power. There will be opposition from the enemy. There's no question.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So talk about some of the relationships now down the road. 7 years later, has there been an opportunity for some repair?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you share some of that?
So two of my best friends are Jocelyn and Karen, and I've known both of them since I was 18. Karen and I had a friendship the whole time, but we weren't like close friends. You know, we hung out, we did things together, but yeah, well, that's just kind of Janessa, you know. Jocelyn and I actually stopped talking, and she removed herself from the friendship. She's like, you know, you need help. This isn't okay. And that was after I went to visit her in Colorado and stole her husband's pain meds. So, I mean, she had right to be like,
sure.
Okay. Karen was my maid of honor in my wedding. Jocelyn's amazing. We, every time we come back, we have this big fam friendly dinner. It's called the Cool Kids. It's our little chat. And it's just beautiful to watch her raise her kids and to be a part of her life.
So there has been great blessing in those areas, and God has been faithful once again in helping restore some relationships that took some hits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, even my husband and I, my husband and I had the first couple of years of just, okay, buckle up, you know, and it was a lot more than he signed up for. So that was really cool.
Yeah. Well, that's when you know you're in love, when you go through some difficult things, get on the other side, you know what?
And you've survived it. We always make fun of him for being so persistent.
Yeah.
And he's like, I knew the real you was in there.
God
he would
bless
always
him.
Say that.
Yeah.
He's pretty cool.
Yeah. He sounds really cool. All right, George, we're going to take a little break. We're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George, and we're talking to Janessa, hearing quite a story. God has got some amazing things that he's doing in her life. We're going to learn about that when we come back from the break. It's incredibly fascinating. Be right back. Welcome back to Real Recovery. Bill and George, we've got Janessa Barr in our studio, and she is here only for a short time because she's heading back home, and home is in Honduras.
Yeah.
Honduras. That's crazy.
Roatan.
Yeah, yep. Roatan, Honduras.
Yep.
Now, God has given you an incredible ministry down there, and you, because you're a doer and you show up with an agenda to get things done... You took some flack from some of the local islanders that said, hey, you're not doing it the island way.
Yeah, I came down not to make friends and wasn't mean, but I came down with, okay, God has told me to do this and incorporate the children. And down there, you can either do animal rescue or children's ministries. They don't really mix.
Okay.
And I'm like, well, I'm a big brother's big sister. She's 23. You know, I started when she was 5. Mm-hmm. I was a nanny for 10 years. Which was horrible during my drug addiction years. I mean, I love kids. I've always wanted to do that. I wanted to be a teacher originally. I came down and just went, showed up every day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing what jealousy and envy and all that can create. I always say that what comes out of your mouth shows your heart. And there's just a lot of sadness and bitterness. There's also not a ton to do down there at night. So it's very common to get together, go drink, and then kind of have that mob mentality about anything new.
Yeah.
Anything.
Yeah. So you started taking care of animals and children. But talk about the ministry to taking care of stray animals.
Oh, my goodness. I started one dog and one kid at a time.
Yeah.
Pushed wheelbarrows up and down the road to feed the strays. Taught them, you know, this is the ticks we're looking for, and this is what we're going to do. We're take them in the ocean and then wash this off. And, I mean, just the group grew and grew and grew. And I have all these amazing pictures of just there's 15 of us in a wheelbarrow. You know, the kids love the attention. They love learning. There's not a lot of opportunities for that kind of stuff down there. Most of the parents work all day, both mm-hmm. of them. So the kids just stay home. The oldest kid takes care of the youngest kid. And they were just so excited to learn about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got a property, had an actual couple little houses for the kids to get together and everything. We actually had to move 4 times to keep the dog safe. We had to move all the way across the island. So the sanctuary is 1 hour from where I live, so that we were in a municipality that wanted us, I'll say.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So why were the dogs in danger?
Because they didn't like me.
Oh, I gotcha.
It's very hard to kind of wrap your mind around animal lovers. Also, expats from America and Canada coming after an expat. And so, yeah, there was poisoning, break-ins, flying drones, trying to beat the dogs, get them taken away, put down, stolen. It got to the point where my husband was like, I think you should quit. Your life's in danger. And, you know, they kept threatening to arrest me when I came back in the country or anything. And it's kind of wild, wild west down there
in
a lot of ways.
Uh-huh.
And I said, no, I can't live with myself knowing that I'm not helping fill bellies and teaching and just showing up for our kids and our dogs.
Yeah. So you've got kind of a ministry of caring for stray dogs mm-hmm. and also teaching children, and you incorporate the children into the dog animal care ministry.
Yep.
And it gives them a sense of connecting to the animals and how to take care of them. And
that's our Rescue Ranger program.
Yeah. And you've got a number of former addicts that are also participating in the rescue.
It's so cool.
Tell me how that all came about.
Oh, I love our church group. I mean, and we're not a big church, but it's exactly the kind of church I've been wanting my whole life.
Nice.
And so Dylan runs the program, and he has the first recovery center in Honduras. And so the woman and her family that does the kids' cupboard, where we do breakfast and Bible study every morning, she is almost 2 years clean. So is her husband. We have people all around the island that are just using their second chance to make a big difference. And even on the island next door, two of the graduates went and started a ministry over there.
Wow. So how many strays are there in Honduras? Like a lot?
When I got there,
yeah.
it was just skeletons lining the street.
Oh.
It was horribly sad. Unfortunately, now with the island having no tourism for the last year and a half, we're seeing cases similar to what, but we get comments all the time. I was down here 2 years ago, and this dog was here, and this was there, or I was here 3 years, and you guys, there's no dogs on the streets. There's, like, what? And so we're working really hard, and we constantly are trying to keep our head above water. But we're the only sanctuary shelter-based that's accepting animals. There's another one that's amazing. We're about 1 hour from that one. And the before and afters, our Monday miracle post, they're just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
They are all miracles.
Yeah. So how long will these dogs stay at the sanctuary, at the refuge? Will they?
Some for life.
Some for life. Okay.
Yep. We have dogs in Michigan, New York, Colorado, Ohio. We have one going to Texas and one going to California.
Mm-hmm. So you try to find them forever homes.
Oh, absolutely.
That's the goal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if they can survive what they've gone through to come in, we take the worst of the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Those are miracles. Yeah, they are. Yeah. because between the blood and the heartworm, I mean, it's not the diseases we're used to up here at all.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what kind of veterinary care do they have available down there?
We actually hired our own vets.
Nice.
To come. We are so big that we have 2 full-time vets. We are opening a public clinic that's rescue-based. So that's another way for funds to come in to help the animals.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, it wasn't like that. I spent a lot on veterinary care. And then I stepped back and I was like, that's a lot of money. And then my partner joined, and she's been on the island for like 10 years, and she saw me, and she's like, you just never gave up, you know? And she had been doing rescues and all that, but just her, the idea of everybody working together wasn't really something that worked out. I wanted that. But yeah, she joined, and she's amazing. We work so well together. My husband's always like, you guys are just so great together. Like, if I said that, you get mad. But she says it. And I'm like, she's awesome.
Yeah. So I know listeners are going to want to say, how do I look at this amazing little ministry that Janessa has? What is there a website?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Roatan, R-O-A-T-A-N, rescue.com. And we're on Facebook.
Roatanrescue.com. Yep.
R-O-A-T-A-N. People put O in there because depending on how you say it.
Yeah.
Roatan.
Yeah.
One person called it rotten.
Oh.
I laughed so hard. I'm not going to lie. I was like, you're coming to visit us at the Rotten Island?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I was like, you won't believe how you said this.
So how long have you been living in Honduras?
It'll be 3 years in December.
Okay. And what a difference God has made in your life over the last 5, would you say, unbelievably transformational?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm like, why did you pick me?
Yeah.
But I'm so happy that I didn't just feel the nudge, but I moved forward with the nudge.
Mm-hmm.
This is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. Going to rehab was the hardest thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's a lot.
Yeah. Now you're running a ministry in Honduras.
It's amazing. It's amazing. But we're so big now that I'm over in the corner doing all the
nice
behind the scenes. And it's amazing.
George, you always say God doesn't, he always has a job for us to do.
Oh, that's why he helps us get sober.
Yeah.
And that's the best part of your recovery right there.
Yeah.
Gosh, sounds exciting.
It's just cool that there's a big group of people that are in recovery and we're choosing to take our second chances and better the island.
Yeah, I love that story. Janessa, really nice to have you here. When do you head back to Honduras?
On Saturday.
Okay.
Get to go see my 500 animals.
Okay, so we're gonna say be safe and continue God's blessing in your life.
It's amazing. It's a giant, giant miracle.
Yeah. That wraps up another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. So glad you joined us tonight. George, any parting thoughts? Good.
No,
I guess we're done.
How many dogs do you want, George?
Yeah.
I already have one.
So you want 2 more. You know, if you adopt a cat, you get 10 for free. It's a special we're running right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a special.
I'm not a cat guy.
Yeah.
I have horses.
Thanks for listening to Real Recovery. We'll see you next time. Have a great week.
I didn't do, but I continue learning. I never meant to do those things to you, and so I have to say before I go.
Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.